In this week's episode, we discuss defining your marketing budget out of all the options that are out there and presenting that budget to the powers that be. Welcome to You're the Marketing Department, the show for you, the CEOs, VPs, or solo marketers inside a growing organization. Whether it's your main task or just one hat you wear, we're here to provide tips, resources, and encouragement as you perform the impossible of leading an organization as a one-man or woman marketing department. And as always, be sure to check out our website, newnorth.com/podcast, for information about today's show and resources into marketing. My name's John. I'll be your host of the show today, and I am joined by Tobin. How's it going, Tobin?
It's going great, John. How are you doing?
Well, I've been better.
Well, been better. What's wrong?
So I'm in the process of moving into a new apartment, and let me tell you, it's quite a process.
Ooh, it does sound like it. Moving is one of the top stressful events of any... I mean, like, I'd know.
Why would you know that, though?
It's a known fact that moving is one of the most stressful things someone goes. It's like moving, new job.
That's it.
Other things.
Marriage, maybe.
Marriage could be one of them. Yeah, it's very stressful. So you're stressed out? Is that what you're saying?
I'm a little bit stressed out. I think I have a high tolerance for stress, but I'm still stressed out. I'll tell you why.
Okay, why?
There's a lot of money that goes into moving into an apartment.
There is.
You know who my best friends are right now in the furniture world?
Who's that?
Goodwill and IKEA.
Yes. Those are good ones. I think my entire first house was furnished by Mr. IKEA.
Mr. IKEA.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking about buying one of these like foldable futon couches. $80. Worth it or not?
$80. Worth it or not?
Well, first of all, what's your take on...
Do you have a bed?
No.
This would be your main bed.
I have a mattress. Do we really need a bed frame?
No.
Okay, bam, I'm set.
Yeah.
Moving on to the futon.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, futons are handy. I know people have many futons.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Who has many futons? And do they like
I can't name them by name because I don't know how they feel about the futons.
Okay.
But let's just say it's a handy
couch. Have you ever owned a futon?
Yeah. I had. I had an excellent futon. We actually sold recently.
Should I budget money for my futon?
You should budget money for your futon. You should budget money for probably one whole month's rent for things you didn't expect in moving either.
Okay, like what?
I don't know. Then you only can't expect them. That's the magic of it. You just don't know what it's going to be.
Okay, yeah.
And worst case scenario, you might get a new TV out of it if you budget that money. Because if you budget like, you know, a couple $100 and then you didn't spend it, like, hey.
Bam, new TV.
Or you could save it.
Nah, probably spend on a new TV.
Yeah, that's the way to go. It is football season. So there you go.
Speaking of budgeting.
Speaking of
budgeting. The topic for today's show is setting up your marketing budget. I think this is pretty relevant as we start to head into the fall and the new year.
Yeah.
Well, where do we start this conversation?
Great. That's a great place to start. The beginning where we would start this conversation. So yeah, and you're right. This is time of year where we start getting emails about budget for 2017. Mm-hmm. What should I be thinking about? What should we be doing? So this is a great kind of milestone podcast / topic anytime in the fall for marketing budgets and what's happening. So I think if we're going to start this conversation, being that we're talking about digital marketing here, the cornerstone of all of this is the website.
Amen to that.
Yes, that is it. So the first thing you need to think about with the marketing budget is your website, and really that's up to par. And there's a lot of other things we're going to talk about in this show, but the website is the key of it. We can't talk about SEO, we can't talk about social, we can't talk about email or video or any of this stuff unless your website is ready to go.
Mm-hmm. So what does that look like, getting a website ready to go?
Right. So I think, you know, if your website, let's just make a couple generalizations and you listeners at home can kind of think about this. If you haven't updated your website significantly in the past 3 years, you're probably not up to speed.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of what's changed so much. If you haven't done any major retools or kind of redesigns, that's a big piece. If you're not collecting leads from your website, if your website does not have any kind of content generation or blog, that's another piece of it. If you don't have content offers where you're converting at least 1-3% of your visitors to contacts,
mm-hmm.
Your website needs some work. Your website should be working for you. And also, if it doesn't have clear call to actions, doesn't have case studies, portfolio, if someone can't make a complete buying decision on your website, it's missing something, right? It's not there. So hard to give it a generalization, but really, you know, if you're listening right now, if you feel that there's some pains in your website, the number one priority for you to deal with is those pains on your website.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's say that you've got a website that maybe you're satisfied with, or you know the steps that you'll be taking to finish up your website. What's the next step after that?
Great. So the first step, the first thing I always look at for marketing budgets is going to be SEO, which stands for
Search Engine Optimization. I got you.
Nice.
Thanks. Yeah. So search engine optimization, that's your first bucket.
Why is that your first?
Well, I think everything revolves around this, right? So this is the digital world. For most of our clients, the number one source of traffic for them is organic search. Mm-hmm. If you go to your analytics and your number one source of traffic isn't organic search, we would really want to know why. Like, what are you doing? What are you not doing? Because if you don't have organic search as number one, you're either doing something very right or very wrong.
What would you be doing right?
I don't know. I've experienced a few clients who have a lot of direct and a lot
right,
of referral. They
have a recognizable name.
Yeah, the brand name. So they're getting in. There's maybe an easy URL. They're doing a lot of display, and so they're getting some good traffic.
Right.
But I think the majority of that is happenstance. It's not really anything measurable or understandable, but the organic search always converts at a better rate, most degree too. So having a good, strong organic search is going to be critical to what you want to do. And as I'm speaking this podcast, my chair is slowly sinking.
I've noticed you getting shorter and shorter.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing. So maybe by the end of this podcast, I'll be actually speaking to the base of the microphone. So we'll see how it goes. So as you get your budgets together, SEO is the number one thing. So there's two parts of SEO though. So let's think about this. When we're saying SEO, we're saying about search engine optimization. When we think about that, sometimes the idea of like, well, there's modifications I need to do to my site. That's one aspect. But if you stand back, we have the site on what we call on-site SEO. We've got off-site SEO, which is actually doing things on other sites to help your site. But I think I'd go even further to having those two as well as PPC. So that's really
it's
a search engine.
Yeah.
It's search engine on steroids, right? You're paying for the listings, what you're doing there. So I think you need to have in your SEO component an understanding of where you stand. So your number one objective is if you don't know right now, you need to benchmark keywords for your industry and see where you are. If you don't have an SEO strategy right now, that'd be the number one thing after website. What keywords do you want to rank for? Where are you with those rankings? I mean, there's many tools. I know one of the first things we do when we engage a client is to get 100 to 200 keywords and benchmark where they are and also some of the volume around that to understand where they can really go with the search optimization. And then either planning through some of the other things we're going to talk about to reach those keywords, or even using pay-per-click. If you're a plumber, that's a callback to one of our earlier podcasts.
Greg the plumber.
And if you are not showing up for plumbing, DC, and you're in the DC area, you need to figure out how to get there. And the quickest way to get there is going to be pay-per-click.
Mm-hmm.
And so search, thinking about search as a method of traffic, not just tweak a title, tweak a text. This is really about search being the number one place you're seen, pay-per-click, and then the on-site SEO.
So. Now, question, how often do you have to do SEO campaigns? Is this something that needs constant maintenance to stay at the top of the rankings, or is this something maybe you touch once every couple of years?
I would say it's constant. And so that's why I think when we're talking about the marketing budget, you're looking at anywhere, and this is the broad topic, broad meaning with pay-per-click, anywhere between $500 to $2,000 a month.
Including pay-per-click.
Including pay-per-click, because that sounds a lot if you're just talking about on-site SEO, but if you're including pay-per-click, $500 to $2,000 a month in SEO could be a pretty solid budget. I mean, I know some clients are doing $1,500 a month in pay-per-click and spending some of that on on-site SEO too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really bare bones for the on-site SEO. But yeah, that's really your number one spend. I mean, you have a website.
Now put it to use.
Yeah, if you have a great website, it's fantastic. But if no one sees it, it's nothing. If you build it, they won't come. That's the adage with the online. They build it, they're not going to come. But if you use good search engine, you use good pay-per-click, you'll get the traffic you're looking for from that channel.
The traffic you're looking for.
Yeah. So SEO, we talk about that part. We talk about the pay-per-click, the on-site. I think another piece that comes in there when we talk about SEO, which is actually a whole other budget line item, is content creation. Because really once you've optimized your pages to a certain degree, really the next step you're going to have is offsite, which is doing some backlinks and other strategies, but also creating more content for your site. And the number one way to do this is through blogging.
Right.
You know, John, we do so much content creation for our clients as well. What are your first thoughts with content creation?
Yeah, I think you're right. Maybe one of the most obvious benefits to creating a lot of content is the impact it has on your SEO rankings. So when you're creating all these blog posts on different topics, what you're doing is you're generating more pages on your site, and Google looks favorably upon
your site having more pages, it's more things to index, it's more opportunities for keywords to show up. And so when you have more posts and more content, it definitely boosts your keyword and your rankings on Google. So that's maybe the most obvious reason to have a consistent stream of content on your site.
Yeah, and Google definitely honors that as well with SEO in terms of how frequently you're publishing. If you had a recommendation for kind of our clients out there trying to put together like how much content should I be creating, what would be your kind of base recommendation? Maybe where would be the kind of, if money wasn't an object, where would you recommend them?
If money's not an object, you're writing nonstop 24/7.
Yeah.
No, but I think that the baseline, the absolute baseline that I would say is you need to be posting at least 1 to 3 times a month. I think that where we'd like to see you be would be 3 times a week. I know HubSpot has some studies on this that show once you get to around 3 posts a week, Google and other search engines credit your site a lot more because they view it as having frequent updates, dynamic information as opposed to static. And so they give you a lot of search credibility once you get to that 3 posts a week threshold.
Yeah, that's great. And so I think that sounds daunting for maybe a lot of our one man, one woman marketing departments, but I think that's really where you start looking at your agency partner to help you out with that. There's a lot that your agency can do for that. So think about budgets. Maybe they can help you create some of that budget. But honestly, for content creation, you're going to be looking anywhere between, this is from a year-long perspective, anywhere between $9,000 to $30,000 for content, depending on how much you create, how much you do. And this is just written word content, not video or podcast. Talk about that a little bit later.
Right, just blog posts.
Just blog posts. Some of the images for that blog post is a good comprehensive number. And again, it depends on how much you're doing. But that really is going to enhance your SEO. Done this for clients. We've seen it on our own site. It definitely does work. And so as you think about SEO, keyword aspect, moving in the content. But you know, when you're making that kind of investment, 9 to 30, you're kind of thinking like, wow, it's a lot just for that. But I think that same content can be used in other dimensions. And I think the first one that comes to mind for me is email marketing.
Right, certainly. I think that, you know, as you're creating this content, you should be creating it with the idea in mind that you're going to be using it not just on your blog, but in other mediums as well. And you're right, I think email marketing is maybe one of the most obvious. A great place for your blog articles to show up is in your email newsletters. I think you should write your content with that in mind, that you'll be sending it out to your email list. Write about topics that they'll be interested in, topics that'll help you develop a reputation as one of the experts in your industry, in your field. And as you're creating that content, that will lead itself naturally to these email newsletter generations. Your customers want to hear from you probably more often than you think. As you're creating, you know, 3 posts a week, you have the ability then to be sending them an email newsletter once a week, at least once a month. They want to be kept up to date in your industry. You can drive awareness, keep your business top of mind.
Yep, exactly. And that's where email marketing, I think, becomes our fourth budget item as we think about what is email marketing and how does that come to be for your campaigns, your company. You know, newsletter is a great thing. I mean, newsletters, in the way that we're saying it, no one really does a newsletter anymore. We'll put a post in the show note about really what newsletters are, but really we're talking about content that's delivered to your client on a frequent basis that helps build your case, your reputation, insights. And in this kind of knowledge sharing economy that we have right now, sharing content, giving them ideas, giving them insights,
it's
from
valuable.
Your company, it's valuable to them, it's valuable to you in the long run. So as you're writing the content, you may be creating some SEO-based content, but you may be creating, like John was saying, nurturing content that talks about, you know, decisions and making purchase decisions, maybe you versus your competitor, such a wide range of breadth of content that can be used then in email marketing. And so for email marketing, you're going to have your newsletter. You may also develop drip campaigns, which is another way of delivering even some of that same content to your customer over time. So a drip campaign, if you're not using these now, they're fantastic with the sales team. We're talking about campaigns that are triggered off an event like a new lead or a new event where there's 4 or 5 emails that are sent out over time or even based on reactions to the website that drip into that customer. So if you don't have a drip campaign set up now, doing one for lead nurturing, doing one for customer retention, or doing one for any kind of specialized sales scenario would be a great thing. So for email marketing, your budgets could be anywhere, you know, big range. I'm kind of scratching my head here a little bit because I think you have to think about what your email sending system is.
Yeah.
So if you do have something like HubSpot, that's already thrown in there. But if you don't, you've got, you know, some kind of monthly cost with it. And then whether you're creating it or you're having your agency do it, could be anywhere between, you know, $300 or $400 to send to $1,000 to $2,000 a month based on how much email you're doing. I know a good drip campaign might run between $5,000 and $7,000 just to get the thinking and the testing and everything done that really is effective with a good drip campaign. Don't ever just, you know, get a drip campaign and run it. You need to test it, make sure it's working. And so for email marketing, the newsletters, the drip campaigns, depending on what industry you're in, that'd be a good place to invest heavily, because it is still the number one ROI marketing channel for digital marketing.
Google it. What's true?
Yeah, Google it. It is absolutely true. It's been true since, I feel like, at least 2000 and...
Since Al Gore invented the internet.
Yeah, probably. He probably invented the internet and then invented email right after that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But at least 4 or 5 years now. And I don't think anyone's going to usurp it anytime soon. People worry about spam. People worry about this. There's a reason why it's still number one. There's a reason why Amazon sends you an email every day, it seems like.
Love those emails. Yeah. Great products.
Yeah. I never knew I needed a new rubber toaster.
Or a futon.
Yeah, or a futon. It knows you've been looking at futons now. So you got this content. We talked about putting it into email marketing. I think we can also use some of that content into the next item in our list, which is social media.
Social media is such a broad topic, and I think it's fairly intimidating for a lot of businesses to dive into. I know we see a lot of times maybe a business try out social media and not have a coherent strategy in place, maybe just fire at will, fire from the hip when they remember to post, and then they're not seeing the results. So I think the first thing you have to think about when you're talking about developing your social media budget is, what do you want to get out of social media?
Right, I agree. And I think it all stems from where you are. And like you said, if you've tried it and you've given up on it in the span of maybe 2 months, you haven't really tried it yet. Mm. I mean, there's more you need to do there. And so coming back to the main question, what's your goal? Sometimes there's unrealistic goals with social media. I mean, you're not going to get 300 leads the first month from social media.
Unless you share something that's really funny.
Unless it's really good. Yeah. I don't know what it would be, but I haven't seen anything like it. So knowing what your goals are. Maybe your goal is just to drive traffic from social media. In that case, you're looking at what those metrics are, how much you need to invest to get that metric out. And really that comes back to this idea of looking at what you're doing, understanding the cost that's going into it, and the results. I mean, if you're paying $4 or $5 a click from PPC, but you can get 50 clicks for $100 for social media.
Bam, social's your choice.
Social, just one. So are you really looking at your cost per click, cost per traffic kind of thinking, which, you know, is part of this whole budgeting scenario we'll talk about in our food for thought section. But this idea of what really is the value chain and does this channel provide it? So if you know your goals, maybe you need to relook at your goals if social didn't work for you before. But everyone should be investing into social. You may only have one or two channels you can really do. I mean, you may only be in LinkedIn, you may only be Facebook, you may only be Twitter. There's got to be one for you. Even right. In B2B, if you sell space shuttle parts to, you know, three companies in the whole U.S., you can still be on LinkedIn. Like, you can still be doing good LinkedIn stuff. I mean,
you can have a great group there.
Yeah, you could be killing it. So it does work for everyone. There's no industry that's too niche to be in social. So I think social media, depending on how you go about it.
So what are some ways to go about it then? I think one of the linchpins is going to be your content, but what else? You know, you're sharing your own blog articles. Is it a one-way street?
Personally, I think from what we've seen result-wise, social is social. It's
that's deep right there.
Yeah, thank you. Quote that one. It's integrated, so it's a conversation. It's a conversation. I wish we would have just called it conversational media, because I think it would have been a lot
easier. No, it's still Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah, it's Zuckerberg. It's changed it. So if you have those pieces in there, you can understand what you're talking about. So not just posting our content, but talking about making connections. And, you know, don't be that guy who, if you're on LinkedIn, just tries to connect with everybody.
Ooh.
No one connects with you.
Oh, I might be that guy.
Don't be that guy, John.
I tried a couple times.
Yeah, exactly. So I think if you had to put a number to social media, I think you'd be looking at anywhere between $500 to $1,000 a month in social media management. Whether if you're having an agency outside do it, internally, you may be able to have someone else run a strategy for you. So you may be able to have someone who can run the strategy, but they still have the strategy created, and that might be just a few grand. So again, depending on where you go. Now, some of you may be really into social, maybe doing lots of social campaigns. Obviously, the number means nothing to you, but we're trying to cover a lot of bases in a broad podcast here, so take it with a grain of salt. But I definitely think social should be in everyone's playbook, no matter where you are. Because when you have social, you're using the written content you've already created.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can bring in imagery with infographics, things like that. And you can also bring in video, which
is a great
segue into the next thing that
which is video.
Which is video. John, what's your take on video?
Well, I love video, first of all. I'm starting to become a little bit maybe inundated with it on Facebook, where you have these autoplay videos. But I do think it's clear that the time has come for video to dominate, or at least play a major role in your content strategy. Now, my question is, what level does your video need to be at for it to be viable? Is it something that you can just slap together with an iPhone and throw it out there and have people watch it and enjoy it? Or do you need to pay a lot of money for a video production company and produce some real high quality content? Maybe get a professional like Saturday Night Live writer to throw in some good jokes.
Right,
there.
Right, sure.
What do you need here?
We've never needed a Saturday Night Live writer.
You've got me.
For this podcast. So we're doing good without it. So yeah, it's a great question. Video now has become so ubiquitous. I think 4 years ago, you wouldn't have dreamed of shooting a video on a phone and putting it on your website. It would have seemed atrocious.
Atrocious.
Atrocious. But now, I think it all depends on the channel. So you're kicking this idea around. I mean, you could shoot an iPhone video in an afternoon, put it on your Twitter feed, and you're done. It wow. would be legitimate. I mean, so no problem. But if you're going to make a video for the homepage of your website, where you're going to be showing thousands of people a month.
That's when you need Saturday Night Live.
That's when you need, yeah, you need some good video production. I mean, that's where you may invest $5,000 to $10,000 in a video. I mean, you might be looking at, I'd probably benchmark between $1,000 and $2,000 per 30 seconds if you're going to look at a budget for a video. Running a 5-minute video, that's going to run you $10,000, $15,000 to do it really well, to get lighting. Actors, you may not be the right person. Your CEO may not be the right person for the video. You know, think about these kind of things.
Yeah, but put it gently, though.
Yeah, yeah, put it nicely. I think everyone should make it a goal. If you don't have one right now, everyone by the end of 2017 should have a video on their website, Ooh. Even more so on their homepage.
That's a good goal.
It is good. This media's bandwidth is there. We're not in a bandwidth crunch. I mean, kind of growing up through the internet in the past 15, 20 years, bandwidth has been a challenge. It's no longer a challenge. Plenty of bandwidth, even bandwidth to phones. People are digesting video. YouTube is still one of the top three social media channels of all. Video is here, and you're just missing the boat at this point if you haven't got a video on your homepage. So make that a big budget item. Make it experimental. I think you're going to get a lot of pushback on it, but there's so many ways you can address
video. So what are the benefits of this? What's the benefit of having the video on your homepage?
It's high engagement. Mm-hmm. Right? It's just like this. It's what we could call long form content, right? It's one thing to have someone scan your homepage trying to get to the information they're trying to get. But if you can engage them visually, this kind of gets even into Marshall McLuhan and hot and cold media and this idea of engagement in media, which if you haven't read any of his stuff, it's kind of a sit down coffee thing. But basically, his premise was that because you do so little thinking when you watch videos, because it's called a hot medium, it's delivered up so quickly and so richly to you that you tend to analyze it less.
Huh.
And so it just kind of like zaps in your brain. That's why you can see a kid like zombied out in front of the TV. That's why most adults are zombied out in front of the TV, because it's got sight and sound and your brain just like kicks into neutral and sucks it in. Versus reading, which is cold meaning, where you have to actually engage into it. You have to actually read it. You have to kind of put some energy into it. So,
yeah, turn your visitors into zombies.
Yeah, zombies, and then put the big buy now button in front of them. I think video is going to be critical for everyone to take on. And they can be part of your social strategy, be part of your email strategy. Still can't quite embed video into email perfectly, but there's definitely ways around it. But all of that stuff, even SEO strategy with video is getting big. So that gives you some good benchmarks for video, but definitely make it a budget item for you this year.
Mm-hmm.
And even going one degree off of that, podcasting, if you're thinking about podcasting, if you've liked the audio format, if you have a lot of long form content, in our profession, B2B, you know, having conversations about marketing, there could be a space for you and your business about conversations around what you do, and podcasts can be a great way of getting that together.
Oh yeah, definitely agree with that. I think it's a really good way to present yourself in a more personal light.
There's a lot of conversation that happens around making decisions like this. If you're a considered purchase B2B where, you know, you do proposals, you do conversations, you've got 2 or 3 sales meetings, there's a lot of decision process that goes into it. Why not be able to have a channel that a customer can hook onto and learn more about how you think? Some of our biggest clients that
Is it just customers though? Isn't a podcast for those in your industry? I mean,
it could be, yeah, it could be for both. I think you can see how great you are. As you're an industry leader doing a podcast, but I think one of the biggest impacts that this can have for you, this whole kind of content approach to marketing too, is turning the heads of people you didn't think you could turn.
Yeah.
One of the earliest stages of our content marketing for our New North even was getting a call from Target based on some of our content. And here we are, you know, not a JWG, not a Fifth Avenue, or sorry, Madison Avenue
or Fifth
ad agency. I mean,
we're more of a Fifth.
We're more probably. Of a Fifth Avenue. Yeah. But we caught the attention with our thinking, and that's really what the podcast and the video allow you to do, is get more into how you think, how your thinking can impact your client, and finding a channel for that. So I'd be all for podcasts.
Tricky, you have to have the personality for a podcast.
Yes, someone has to have the personality. Now, we may defy that rule. I don't know if we have personality or not, but hopefully our content usurps our personality. But I think you can be a personality, but you need to kind of gauge whether you even have a desire to be personality for radio in this sense.
Do you have a golden voice?
Yeah.
Like me. Afternoon.
Do you have a face for radio? is that what they say? So I think there's a lot of considerations that go into it, but it's a great medium. It's not terribly hard, depending on how you go about it. And you can use services like ours or anyone else's to just record simple podcasts, get it out there. Doesn't have to be terribly high production value, but it helps. And you can also think about it even with less frequency as some things. I mean, once a month podcast isn't bad. Twice a month isn't bad. Yeah. So it's less to do. And they don't have to be very long. It's less to do, and they don't have to be very long. So I think you have a lot to work on.
Is that something you should make room in your budget for this year?
I think if you're feeling like you can make a case for it, which I think is the biggest thing. Can you make a case for a podcast? If you haven't done blogging yet, I probably wouldn't jump into podcasts.
Oh, definitely not.
There's definitely a sequence to that. So I think if you get content going, get your SEO going, and you're ready to now, you're getting traffic, let's turn that traffic into more of an engagement. This is kind of like getting a passerby of your store to come in the door. Let's get them to come in, or let's get them to come to the podcast, and where we can talk more deeply about what we do and how it works and those pieces there. Otherwise, they're just browsing your site and they're gone. I mean, the average page view is still less than 2 minutes. You may be spending less than 4 minutes on your site together. That's a browse by. I mean, how much information can you possibly glean in 4 minutes? So a good web visitor is good, but if we get them into the podcast, we've got them.
We've got them hooked.
We got them hooked for at least 20 minutes. So it's a good, especially if you have a high expertise in what you do as well. If you're just selling cookies, I don't think there's a cookie podcast that could be that interesting about cookies.
There's some pretty good cookies out there. I would listen to a podcast.
I'm not sure I can stand 20 minutes of cookie industry news and updates though.
Well, that's why you're not subscribed.
That's why. Yeah, I'm not there. So that gives you a wrap up. So we've got, starting with the website, get what you need to get there to make sure your site is really performing, can perform the business and sales needs that it needs to do for you. Get your SEO set up straight. Make sure you've got a good budget for SEO between 500 to 2000. That includes some pay-per-click in there. Get your content creation set up. Make sure you've got a good budget for that. Email marketing, social media, depending on where you want to go, but definitely get engaged into it. Video, make it a priority this year. And then podcast, if you've got space for it, it makes sense for you. It can be a real winner. And it can also augment video. I know some people will do videos and actually just strip the audio out for podcasts.
Kill two birds with one stone.
Exactly. So hopefully that's a good mix for you. If you have other questions, please reach out to us at podcast@newnorth.com, and we can maybe just answer some specific questions if you're struggling with some matchups there, kind of like a sit'em or play'em fantasy matchup. If you've got something in your budget.
I've got no questions. Team's 1-0 right now.
Yeah. So if you need something in your budget you want to know whether you should really include it or not for next year, let us know. We'd be happy to kind of talk with you. Or post it to our LinkedIn group, and we can all talk about it there.
Great.
Welcome back. We go anywhere. all right, we're going to jump into our food for thought section for this podcast. And I wanted to cover the second part of the budget conversation, which is presenting the budget. Now, a lot of you have budget presentations that you need to make when you justify creating some of these budgets. Now, if you're the CEO, obviously you can kind of present yourself the budget and it's not a big deal. You can just be able to justify it in your mind. But if you're presenting to a group, presenting to a board, your marketing budget, we wanted to give you some tips that we've seen from even coming from our clients or coming from what we've seen in that process to help you prepare for this. So we got 3 points for you to really think about as you go into this. The first one is going to sound simple, but we've got some detail to it. First one is be prepared. Now, obviously, you're going to be prepared.
Boy Scouts right there.
Yeah, always be prepared. But what does that mean? I think for me, when I think about that, obviously, you got your whole physical component. If you're actually doing a presentation, I mean, getting your sleep, you know, preparing your material, all that kind of stuff, rehearsing what you're going to say, that's going to be huge.
Goes a long way.
You need to be able to be flexible and be able to move, because you are going to get questioned. In any budget presentation, you're going to have questions come up. People are going to try to nitpick you on this dollar, results, things like that. Also, make sure if you're using a PowerPoint or using something else, that you have a clear deck. And I would really keep the attention on you rather than the PowerPoint, if that's your approach. I mean, there's some great resources out there on how to present well. So if you can make your presentation strong, not needing to rely on the PowerPoint, no one wants to look at a spreadsheet on a PowerPoint slide.
I love those things. I just go home and look at those.
Yeah, no one ever. Some people print out spreadsheets for their wall art.
Yeah. That's in my new apartment. That's all I've got.
Yeah.
Goodwill exactly. Had a lot of them.
Yeah. So no one wants to look at that. So I think your PowerPoint needs to be topical, just background to what you're talking about, and you're really the center stage. If you're not comfortable being center stage, you need to work on that. Just being honest with you, work on being front and center with your board. They need to know who you are and they can trust you, and that's all about you, not about the slide. So that's the first item, be prepared. The second one, have data. This is the most important one. Have data. Have data will travel. Get data for the data.
Just some catchy slogans.
Yeah. So the real aspect of the data conversation is about understanding where you've been. So if you're presenting your budget for SEO, you need to make the case for it, right? So what is the case? How much traffic are you missing? How much traffic is out there? What would that traffic do for your business? Mm-hmm. Building that small case, and so much of the information is out there. I think if you just threw a number out there for SEO and said, we want to spend $50,000 on SEO this year, and you've got a $100,000 budget, that's 50% of it, people are going to say, why? Yeah. Why do you want to spend that much? Like, it doesn't make any sense. What's out there that you're not seeing? Now, you may know, but unless you have a way of presenting it with the data, that's going to be critical for you, for them to be able to see and be able to work through that. And also have data set up for every aspect of what you're talking about. So if you're doing new social, if you're going to do video, if you're going to do something that's even experimental, if you're doing an experimental budget, which you can completely do, it's totally legitimate, because there's going to be things that come out, new media, you know, Snapchat and social, or new kinds of ad buying material, or ways of getting clients, lead sources, maybe going to try some buying some leads this year. Just stay that it's experimental. There's a risk associated with it. It's not a huge part of your budget, but show what you might be able to get, some data other people have gotten, and what you plan to, what would be a goal for you in that process. It's okay to not have a 100% justifiable budget for everything you do. I mean, the major should be covered, but if you're going to try experiment with some things, go for it. I mean, the early bird gets the worm, right? There's going to be some things that don't have tons of data. If everyone else has already done it and you're putting in your budget item, you may be just paying more for it. Right. Nope. If you're the early one out for getting into something social or doing some kind of trade show that isn't really popular right now, go for it. Be one of the first ones, see what's out there, and do what you can do. But I think that there's certain areas that don't need quite the justification. An experimental budget may be some of it. And have fun with it too. You may just want to try some things, and having that cushion can be helpful. So have your data. Make sure you back it up. That's analytic data. That's backdated. Also, you can talk to your partners, your agency partners about data. Sometimes if you're trying to increase your budget for something like video, well, what kind of video stats are out there? What can you use to back it up? What can you see? And what really could you expect to get from it? And what would be the topic of that video? If you just say you've got a budget for video, that might not be enough.
Yeah, your presentation probably isn't very good at that point.
Yeah, that's not, you're not going to connect with anyone.
I'm not
right?
convinced.
Which you shouldn't be at that point. So I think that comes down to the third point of the whole presenting the budget, which is telling a story.
Ah, no, that's going to get me.
This is it. So of being prepared, having your data, all of that has to work into a story.
You know what they say.
What do they say, John?
Good stories happen to the people who can tell them. Have you heard that, Devin?
I have heard that. I've heard many variations of the same thing before, too. But if you can tell a good story, then
it's going to happen to you.
Then you're going to have a good story. Yeah. I'm not sure that's true, but we'll see. So if you can tell a story, you need to present your data as a story. So your budget is a story of what you think is going to happen, what you plan to have happen in the coming year. So either that can use past data to pursue it. Here's the trajectory we're on. Here's where we're going to go. But the key with your presentation is to start with a goal in mind. So if you start your presentation, what you want to do is plan out, here's what the end of the next year looks like for us. We have this kind of lead. We have this kind of traction. We have this kind of user base. We have this kind of growth. Start there and then quickly jump back to where you are right now.
Ooh.
So you're starting out, we're going to have 150% more leads than we do right now. And right now we've got five. So that's not a big jump. But the idea is that you set the stage and get them to be like buying in with the goal. And as you work through your presentation, you can build up the case for where they're getting to. And you end back on the goal saying, and here's how we're going to get there. You walk through all the stages and get to the final goal again. And I think that presentation tells a story, and you're basically walking them through the narrative of what's going to happen this next year. And I think you'll find so much resonance with that as you do your presentation. They won't necessarily think about the budgets because they're seeing the interconnections. They're seeing how SEO can impact lead gen or the video can impact the nurture and the email. They're seeing how it all goes together as one larger story. And they'll support the story. Now, they may determine that some stories can't be quite as long or have as much money to them, but they'll still get the bigger picture altogether rather than just, again, going down with a red laser pen on a spreadsheet.
Yeah, at least get a green laser pen, right?
Yeah, it's more fanciful for a story to have a green laser. But if you can tell a story, that's where the slide can come in too. I mean, the slides can really support that story and grow from there and use as many examples as you can. Again, there's a little bit of an entertainment value here. I mean, you want to try to entertain them with what you're trying to do, not to the fact that you're trying to, you know, divert eyes from what the real
issues are. But if you're a stand-up comic, you'll have huge success with this.
You could really run with this. Absolutely. You totally could. So I think it's the biggest thing. So be prepared. Have the data you need to present and back up your claims. Don't come in with a broad assumption and expect no one to challenge it. And then weave it all into a story. Make sure you narrate it good. Start with the goal, then back up to where you are and finish back at the goal and see if you can do that in less than 20 slides.
Oh, that's how you know you're good.
So good luck. Let us know how your presentation goes this year. And if you have more questions, just reach out to us at the podcast.
All right, that's all the time we have for today's show. Be sure to subscribe to us in iTunes and leave a review. And also be sure to check out the show notes that we post on the website. Again, that's newnorth.com/podcast.
Thanks, John. And if you would like to reach out to us, join our LinkedIn group. It's You're the Marketing Department group on LinkedIn. It's a fantastic thing. If you have any used furniture that John can use in his
especially
apartment.
Futons are good.
Please go ahead and send them to our office. We'll just forward them on to John.
I'll take that too.
Walmart?
Wall art. Although, Walmart, I mean, if you have a Walmart gift card, I'm not opposed.
He's open to all of it. We thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to talking to you next time. And if you have additional questions, always send them to podcast@newnorth.com, and we will reply as soon as we're not doing this podcast.
Which is now.
Thanks. Bye-bye.